Rita, a novel. What woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost." Luke 15:8-9. Warning. In my book, The Pilgrimage, I replace two of the practices of RAM with exercises in the perception learned in the days when I worked in drama. Although the results were, strictly speaking, the same, I received a severe reprimand from my teacher. There may well be quicker or easier methods. That doesn't matter. What matters is that the tradition remains unchanged, he said. For this reason, the few rituals described in Breda are the same as those practiced over the centuries by the tradition of the moon. A specific tradition that requires experience and practice. Practicing such rituals without guidance is dangerous, inadvisable, unnecessary, and can greatly hinder the spiritual search.
Hola, Kalha.
We used to sit until late at night in a cafe in Lourdes. I was a pilgrim on the sacred road of Rome and still had many more days to travel in search of my gift. She was Breda of Fern and was in charge of a certain stretch of that road. One such night, I asked if she remembered having felt especially moved when she arrived at a particular abbey that forms part of the star-shaped trail followed by initiates in the Pyrenees. "I've never been there," she replied. I was surprised she did, after all, have a gift. "All roads lead to Rome," said Breda, using an old proverb to tell me that gifts could be awakened anywhere. I walked my road to Rome in Ireland. During our subsequent meetings, she told me the story of her search. When she finished, I asked if one day I could write it down. She agreed initially, but whenever we met after that, she kept rising obstacles. She asked to change the names of those involved. She wanted to know what kind of people would read the book and how they would be likely to react. "I've no idea," I said. "But I don't think that's why you are creating all these problems." "You're right," she said. "It's because it seems to me such a personal story, and I'm not sure anyone else would get much out of it." "That's the risk we are now going to take together, Breda. An anonymous text from the tradition says that in life, each person can take one of two attitudes, to build or to plant. The builders might take years over the tasks, but one day they finish what they are doing. Then they find they are hemmed in by their own walls. Life loses its meaning when the building stops. Then there are those who plant. They endure storms and all the many vicissitudes of the seasons, and they rarely rest. But unlike a building, a garden never stops growing, and while it requires a gardener's constant attention, it also allows life for the gardener to be a great adventure. Gardeners always recognize one another, because they know that in the history of each plant lies the growth of the whole world." The author.
Ireland, August 1983 to March 1984, summer and autumn. "I want to learn about magic," said the girl. The magus looked at her, faded jeans, t-shirt, the challenging look adopted by all shy people, precisely when it is least needed. "I must be twice her age," he thought, and despite this, he knew that he had met his soulmate.
"My name is Breda," she went on. "Forgive me for not introducing myself.
I have waited a long time for this moment, and I am more nervous than I thought I would be.
Why do you want to learn about magic? He asked.
So that I can find answers to some of the questions I have regarding life. So that I can learn about the occult powers and possibly how to travel back into the past and forward into the future. It wasn't the first time someone had come to the forest to ask him this. There was a time when he'd been a teacher who was known and respected by the tradition. He had taken on several pupils and believed that the world would change if he could change those around him. But he had made a mistake, and teachers of the tradition cannot make mistakes.
Don't you think you're rather young?
I'm 21, said Brida. If I wanted to start learning ballet, I'd be considered too old. The magus made a sign for her to follow him. They set off together through the forest in silence. She's pretty, he was thinking as the shadows cast by the trees rapidly lengthened and shifted as the sun sank lower on the horizon. But I am twice her age. This, he knew, meant that he might well suffer. Brida felt irritated by the silence of the man walking beside her. He hadn't even been deigned to respond to her last remark. The forest floor was wet and covered in fallen leaves. She, too, noticed the shadows changing and the rapid approach of night. It would be dark soon and they didn't have a flashlight with them. I have to trust him, she told herself. If I believe that he can teach me magic, then I also have to believe that he can guide me through the forest. They continued walking. He appeared to be wandering aimlessly from one side to the other, changing direction even when there was no obstacle in his path. More than once they walked in a circle, passing the same place three or four times. Perhaps he's testing me. She was determined to see this experience through to the end and try telling herself that everything that was happening, including those circular walks, was perfectly normal. She had come a very long way and had hoped for more from this encounter. Dublin was over 90 miles away and the buses to the village were uncomfortable and left at absurd times. She had to get up early, travel for 3 hours, ask the people in the village where she might find him, and explain what she wanted with such a strange man. Finally, someone had told her in which part of the forest he could usually be found during the day, but not without first warning her that he'd already tried to seduce one of the village girls. He is an interesting man, she thought to herself. They were climbing now, and she found herself hoping that the sun would linger a little longer in the sky. She was afraid she might slip on the damp leaves. Why do you really want to learn about magic? Brida was pleased that the silence had been broken. She gave him the same answer she had given before, but he wasn't satisfied. Perhaps you want to learn about magic because it is mysterious and secret, because it provides answers that few human beings ever manage to find in a whole lifetime, or perhaps because it evokes a romantic past. Brida said nothing. She didn't know what to say, afraid to give an answer the magus might not like. She rather wished he would lapse back into his earlier silence. At last, they came to the top of a hill, having crossed the entire forest. The ground there was rocky and bare of vegetation, but at least it was less slippery and Brida could follow the magus without difficulty. He sat on the highest point and asked Brida to do the same. Other people have been here before, said the magus. They too came to ask me to teach them about magic, but I have taught everything I needed to teach. I have given back to humanity what it gave to me. Now I want to be alone, to climb mountains, tend plants, and commune with God. That is not true, replied the girl. What isn't true? He asked, surprised. You might want to commune with God,
but it isn't true that you want to be alone." Breda regretted having spoken. She had spoken on an impulse, and now it was too late to correct her mistake. Perhaps there were people who wanted to be alone. Perhaps women needed men more than men needed women. The magus, however, showed no sign of irritation when he spoke again. "I'm going to ask you a question," he said, "and you must be absolutely honest in your answer. If you tell me the truth, I will teach you what you ask. If you lie, you must never again return to this forest." Breda gave a sigh of relief. He was going to ask her a question. She simply had to tell the truth. That was all. She had always assumed that a teacher would demand really difficult things of someone before taking them on as a pupil. "Let's suppose that I do start teaching you what I have learned," he said, his eyes fixed on hers. "Let's suppose that I start to show you the parallel universes that surround us, the angels, the wisdom of nature, the mysteries of the tradition of the sun, and the tradition of the moon. Then one day, you go into town to buy some food, and in the middle of the street, you meet the love of your life." "I wouldn't know how to recognize him," she thought, but decided to say nothing. This question was turning out to be more difficult than she imagined. "He feels the same and comes over to you. You fall in love with each other. You continue your studies with me. During the day, I teach you the wisdom of the cosmos, and at night, he teaches you the wisdom of love. But there comes a moment when those two things can no longer coexist, and you have to choose." The magus paused for a few seconds. Before he actually asked the question, he felt afraid of what the girl's reply might be. Her coming there that evening meant the end of a stage in both their lives. He knew this because he understood the tradition and intentions of teachers. He needed her as much as she needed him, but she had to answer the question he put to her truthfully. That was the sole condition. "Now answer this question with total honesty," he said at last, screwing up his courage. "Would you give up everything you had learned until then, all the possibilities and all the mysteries that the world of magic could offer you, in order to stay with the love of your life?" Breda looked away. Around her lay the mountains and the forests, and down below, the lights in the village were beginning to come on. Soon, families would be gathering around the table to have supper. They worked hard and honestly, they feared God, and they tried to help their fellow men. They did all these things because they had known love. Their lives had a reason. They could understand everything that was going on in the universe without ever having heard of things like the tradition of the sun and the tradition of the moon. "I see no contradiction between my search and my personal happiness," she said. "Answer my questions." His eyes were still fixed on hers. "Would you give up everything for that man?" Breda felt a tremendous urge to cry. It wasn't so much a question, it was a choice, the most difficult choice anyone would have to make in life. It was something she had already thought about a lot. There had been a time when nothing in the world was as important as herself. She had had several boyfriends and had always believed that she loved each one, only to see love vanish from one moment to the next. Of all the things she had experienced until then, love had been the most difficult. Just then, she was in love with someone slightly older than herself. He was studying physics and had a completely different vision of the world from hers. Once again, she was putting her belief in love, trusting her feelings, but she had been disappointed so often before that she was no longer sure of anything. Nevertheless, this was the great gamble of her life. She continued to avoid the Magus' gaze. Her eyes were fixed on the village and its twinkling lights. People had been trying to understand the universe through love ever since the beginning of time. "I would give it all up," she said at last. The man standing before her, she thought, would never understand what went on in people's hearts. He was a man who knew the power and the mystery of magic, but he didn't know people. His hair was greased, his skin burned by the sun, and he had the physique of someone who used to walk in the mountains. He was so very attractive, with eyes that revealed a soul full of answers, and he would once again be disappointed by the feelings of ordinary human beings. She was disappointed by herself too, but she couldn't lie. "Look at me," said the Magus. Breda felt ashamed, but did as he asked. "You told the truth. I will be your teacher." Darkness fell, and the stars were shining in a moonless sky. It took 2 hours for Breda to tell the stranger her life story. She tried to look for facts that would explain her interest in magic, childhood visions, premonitions, and inner calling, but could find nothing. She simply felt a need to know, that was all. And because of that, she had taken courses in astrology, tarot, and numerology. "Those are merely languages," said the Magus, "and there are not the only ones. Magic speaks all the languages of the human heart." "So what is magic?" she asked. Even in the darkness, Breda could sense that the Magus had turned away from her. He was looking up at the sky, absorbed in thought, perhaps in search of an answer. "Magic is a bridge," he said at last. "A bridge that allows you to walk from the visible world over into the invisible world and to learn the lessons of both those worlds." "And how can I learn to cross that bridge?" "By discovering your own way of crossing it. Everyone has his own way." "That's what I came here to find out." "There are two forms," replied the Magus. "The tradition of the sun, which teaches the secrets through space and the world that surrounds us, and the tradition of the moon, which teaches through time and the things that are imprisoned in time's memory." Breda had understood. The tradition of the sun was the night, the trees, the cold gripping her body, the stars in the sky. And the tradition of the moon was that man before her now, with the wisdom of the ancestors shining in his eyes. "I learned the tradition of the moon," said the Magus, as if he could read her thoughts. "But I was never a teacher of that tradition. I am a teacher of the tradition of the sun." "Teach me the tradition of the sun, then," said Breda, feeling slightly disconcerted, for she had sensed a note of tenderness in the Magus' voice. "I will teach you what I have learned, but the tradition of the sun has many roads. One must trust in each person's ability to teach himself or herself." Breda was right. There was a note of tenderness in the Magus' voice. Far from reassuring her, this frightened her. "I know I am capable of understanding the tradition of the sun," she said. The Magus stopped gazing at the stars and concentrated on the young woman. He knew that she was not quite ready to learn the tradition of the sun, and yet he must teach it to her. Some pupils choose their teachers. "Before our first lesson, I want to remind you of one thing," he said. "When you find your path, you must not be afraid. You need to have sufficient courage to make mistakes. Disappointment, defeat, and despair are the tools God uses to show us the way." "Strange tools," said Breda. "They often dissuade people from carrying on." The Magus knew the reason of these tools. He had already experienced both in body and soul. "Teach me the tradition of the sun," she insisted. The Magus asked Breda to lean back against the rock and relax. There is no need to close your eyes. Look at the world around you and try to see and understand as much as you can. The tradition of the sun is constantly revealing eternal knowledge to each individual. Brida did as the magus told her to, but she felt he was moving much too fast. "This is the first and most important lesson," he said. "It was created by a Spanish mystic who understood the meaning of faith. His name was St. John of the Cross." He looked at the girl's eager, trusting face. In his heart, he prayed she would understand what he had to teach her. She was, after all, his soulmate, even if she didn't yet know it. Even if she was still very young and fascinated by the things and the people of this world. In the darkness, Brida could just make out the shape of the magus going back into the forest and disappearing among the trees to her left. She was afraid of being left there alone, but tried to remain relaxed. This was her first lesson, and she must not show that she was nervous. "He accepted me as his pupil. I can't disappoint him." She was pleased with herself and at the same time surprised at how quickly it all happened. Not that she had ever doubted her abilities. She was proud of herself and of what had brought her there. She was sure that the magus was somewhere nearby, watching her reactions to see if she was capable of learning the first lesson of magic. He had spoken of courage, and so even if she felt afraid, images of the snakes and scorpions that might be living underneath the rock began to rise up from the depth of her imaginations. She must be brave. In a while, he would return to teach her the first lesson. "I'm a strong, determined woman," she repeated to herself under her breath. She was privileged to be there with that man whom other people either loved or feared. She looked back on the evening they had just spent together and recalled the moment when she had sensed a certain tenderness in his voice. "Perhaps he found me interesting. Perhaps he even wanted to make love with me. It wouldn't be a bad experience." There was, however, a strange look in his eyes. What an idiotic thing to think. There she was, in search of something very real, a path of knowledge, and suddenly she was thinking of herself as a mere woman. What an idiotic thing to think. There she was, in search of something very real, a path to knowledge, and suddenly she was thinking of herself as a mere woman. She tried not to think about it again. And it was then that she realized how much time had passed since the magus had left her alone. She felt the beginnings of panic. She had heard contradictory views about that man. Some said he was the most powerful teacher they'd ever met, capable of changing the direction of the wind, of piercing the clouds purely by the power of thought. And Brida was as fascinated as everyone else by such prodigies. Other people thought, people on the fringes of the world of magic who attended the same courses and classes as she did, assured her that he was a black magician and had once used his power to destroy a man because he had fallen in love with the man's wife. And this was why, even though he was a teacher, he had been condemned to wander the lonely forest. "Perhaps solitude has made his madness worse," Brida thought. And again, she felt the first strings of panic. She may have been young, but she knew the harm that loneliness could do to people. Especially as they get older, she had met people who had lost the glow of being alive because they could no longer fight against loneliness and had ended up becoming addicted to it. They were, for the most part, people who believed the world to be an undignified, inglorious place, and who spent their evenings and nights talking on and on about the mistakes others had made. They were people whom solitude had made into the judges of the world, whose verdicts were scattered to the four winds of whoever cared to listen. Perhaps the magus had gone mad with loneliness. A sudden noise nearby made her jump, and her heart raced. All trace of her earlier confidence vanished. She looked around, nothing. A wave of terror seemed to rise up from her belly and spread it through her body. I must get a grip on myself, she thought, but it was impossible. Images of snakes and scorpions and childhood ghosts began to appear before her. Breda was too terrified to stay calm. Another image arose, that of a powerful magician who had made a pact with the devil and was offering her up as a sacrifice. Where are you? She cried. She didn't care now what impression she made on anyone. She simply wanted to get out of there. No one answered. I want to get out of here. Help me. There was only the forest and its strange noises. Breda felt so dizzy with fear she thought she might faint, but she mustn't. Now that she was quite sure he was nowhere around, fainting certainly wouldn't help matters. She must stay in control. This thought made her aware that there was some part of her struggling to maintain control. I mustn't call out, she said to herself. Her shouts could attract other men who live in that forest, and men who live in forests can be more dangerous than any wild animal. I have faith, she started to say softly. I have faith in God, faith in my guardian angel who brought me here and who remains here with me. I can't explain what he is like, but I know he is near. I will not dash my foot against a stone. These last words were from a psalm she had learned as a child and which she hadn't thought about for years. She had been taught the psalm by her grandmother, who had died quite recently. As soon as she wished her grandmother could be there, she immediately felt a friendly presence. She was beginning to understand that there was a big difference between danger and fear. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High. That was how the psalm began. She realized that it was all coming back to her word for word, exactly as if her grandmother were reciting it to her now. She kept reciting for some time without stopping, and despite her fear, she felt calmer. She had no choice. Either she believed in God, in her guardian angel, or she despaired. She felt a protective presence. I need to believe in this presence. I don't know how to explain it, but it exists, and it will stay with me all night, because I don't know how to find my way out of here alone. When she was a child, she would sometimes wake up in the middle of the night, feeling terrified. Her father would carry her to the window and show her the town where they lived. He would talk to her about the night watchman, about the milkman who would already be out delivering the milk, about the baker making their daily bread. Her father was trying to drive out the monsters with which she'd filled the night and replace them with the people who kept watch over the darkness. The night is just a part of the day, he would say. The night is just a part of the day, therefore she could feel as safe in the dark as she did in the light. It was the dark that had made her invoke that protective presence. She must trust it, and that trust was called faith. No one could ever understand faith, but faith was what she was experiencing now. An inexplicable imprison in blackest night. It only existed because she believed in it. Miracles couldn't be explained either, but they existed for those who believed in them. He did say something about the first lesson, she thought, suddenly realizing what was going on. The protective presence was there for because she believed in it. Breda began to feel the fatigue of so many hours under tension. She began to relax again, and with each moment that passed, she felt more protected. She had faith, and faith wouldn't allow the forest to be peopled again with scorpions and snakes. Faith would keep her guardian angels awake and watching. She leaned back against the rock again, and all unknowing fall asleep.
It was light when she woke, and a beautiful sun was gliding everything around her. She felt a little cold. Her clothes were grubby, but her soul was rejoicing. She had spent the whole night alone in the forest. She looked everywhere for the Magus, knowing that she would not find him. He must be walking the forest somewhere trying to commune with God, and perhaps wondering if the girl who'd come to see him the previous night had sufficient courage to learn the first lesson of the tradition of the sun. I learned about the dark night, she said to the now silent forest. I learned that the search for the God is a dark night, that faith is a dark night. And that's hardly a surprise, really, because for us, each day is a dark night. None of us knows what might happen even the next minute, and yet still we go forward, because we trust, because we have faith. Or who knows? Perhaps because we just don't see the mystery contained in the next second. Not that it mattered. What mattered was knowing that she had understood that every moment in life is an act of faith. That you could choose to fill it with snakes and scorpions or with a strong protecting force. That faith cannot be explained. It was simply a dark night, and all she had to do was to accept it or not. Breda looked at her watch and saw that it was getting late. She had to catch a bus, travel for 3 hours, and think up some convincing excuse to give her boyfriend. He would never believe she had spent the whole night alone in the forest. It is a very difficult thing, the tradition of the sun. She shouted to the forest. I have to be my own teacher, and that isn't what I was expecting. She looked at the village down below, mentally traced her path back through the woods and set off. First, though, she turned to the rock again. In a loud, joyous voice, she cried, "There is one other thing. You are a very interesting man." Leaning against the trunk of an old tree, the Magus watched the girl vanish into the woods. He had listened to her fears and heard her cries during the night. At one point, he had even been tempted to go over and embrace her to shield her from her terror, saying that she didn't need this kind of challenge. Now he was pleased that he hadn't, and he felt proud that the girl, in all her youthful confusion, was his soulmate. She went there late one afternoon after work and was delighted with the place. From then on, whenever she could, she would go there to look at the books, but she never bought any because they were all imported and very expensive. She would leaf through them, studying the designs and symbols in some of the books and intuitively tuning into the vibration of all that accumulated knowledge. She had grown more cautious since her experience with the Magus. Sometimes she would bemoan to herself the fact that she only managed to take part in things she could already understand. She sensed that she was missing out on something very important in life, and that if she carried on as she was, she would simply continue to repeat the same experiences over and over. And yet, she didn't have the courage to change. She needed to be constantly struggling to discover her path. Now that she had experienced the dark night, she knew that she didn't want to find her way through it. And although she was sometimes dissatisfied with herself, she felt unable to go beyond her own limitations. Books were safer. The shelves contained the prints of treatises written hundreds of years ago. It was an area in which very few people dared to say anything new, and in the pages of these books, occult knowledge, distant and remote, seemed to smile at the efforts made by each generation to uncover it. She tried to imagine what they must be like in private. Some looked very wise, capable of awakening forces and powers of which mere mortals knew nothing. Others appeared to be desperately trying to discover answers they had long ago forgotten, but without which life had no meaning. She noticed too that the most regular customers always had a word with the owner. They talked about the strangest things, such as the phases of the moon, the properties of stones, and the correct pronunciation of ritual words. One afternoon, Breda got up sufficient courage to do the same. She was on her way back from work on a day when everything had gone well. She thought she would make the most of that good luck. "I know that there are secret societies," she said. She thought this a good conversational opener. She knew something. But the owner merely looked up from his accounts and stared at her in amazement. "I was with the magazine folk," said Breda, rather put out now and not knowing quite how to continue.
He explained to me about the dark night. He told me the path of wisdom means not being afraid to make mistakes. She noticed that the owner was listening more intently now. If the magus had bothered to teach her something, she must be special. If you know that the dark night is the path, why do you need books? She said at last, and she knew the mentioning the magus had not been a good idea. Because that isn't the way I want to learn, she said. The owner looked more closely at the young woman standing before him. While she clearly had a gift, it was nevertheless odd that the magus of folk should have devoted so much time to her. There must be something else. She could be lying, but then again, she had spoken of the dark night. You often come here, he said. You arrive, read a few books, but you never buy anything. They are too expensive, said Brida, sensing that he wanted to continue the conversation. But I have read other books and I have attended courses. She told him the names of her teachers, hoping to impress him still more. The owner examined various packages stored underneath the counter. Brida saw that the packages bore stamps from all corners of the world. She was getting more and more nervous. Her initial courage had vanished completely, but she had no option but to wait for the other customer to check that it was the right book, pay for it, receive his change, and leave. Only then did the owner turn to her again. I don't know how to continue, said Brida. Her eyes were beginning to fill with tears. What are you good at? Asked the owner. Going after what I believe in. That was the only possible reply. She had spent her life in pursuit of what she believed in. The only problem was that she believed in something different every day. The owner wrote a name on the sheet of the paper on which he was doing his counts, tore off the piece he had written on, and held it for a moment in his hand. I'm going to give you an address, he said. There was a time when people accepted magical experiences as natural. There were no priests then, and no one went chasing after the secrets of occult. Brida wasn't sure whether he was referring to her or not. Do you know what magic is? He asked. It is a bridge between the visible world and the invisible world. The owner gave her the piece of paper. On it was a phone number and a name, Vika. Brida snatched the paper from him, thanked him, and left. When she reached the door, she turned and said, I also know that magic speaks many languages, even the language of booksellers, who pretend to be unhelpful but are, in fact, very generous and approachable. She blew him a kiss and disappeared. The bookseller paused over his counts and stood looking at his shop. The magus of folk taught her those things, he thought. A gift, however, good wasn't reason enough for a magus to take such an interest. There must be some other motive, Vika would find out. It was time to close the shop. The bookseller had noticed lately that his clientele was starting to change. It was becoming younger. As the old treatises crowding his shelves predicted, things were finally beginning to return to the place from whence they came. The old building was in the center of town, in a place that is now only visited by tourists in search of a little 19th century romanticism. Brida had to wait a week before Rico could agree to see her, and now she was standing outside a mysterious grey building, struggling to contain her excitement. That building was exactly as she'd imagined it would be. It was just the kind of place where the type of person who visited the bookshop should live. There was no elevator. She went up the stairs slowly so as not to be out of breath when she reached the floor she wanted. And when she arrived, she rang the bell of the only door there. Inside, a dog barked. Then, after a brief delay, a slim, elegant, serious-looking woman opened the door. I phoned earlier, said Brida. Vika indicated that she should come in, and Brida found herself in a living room entirely painted in white and with examples of modern art everywhere, with paintings on the wall and sculptures and vases on the tables. The light from outside was filtered through white curtains. The room was cleverly divided into different areas to accommodate sofas, a dining table, and a well-stocked library. Everything was in the very best taste and reminded Breda of the architecture and design magazines she used to look at on the newsstand. It must have cost a fortune, she thought. Vika led Breda into the vast living room, into an area furnished by two Italian armchairs in leather and steel. Between the two chairs was a low glass table with steel legs. You are very young, said Vika at last. There was little point in making her usual comment about ballerines, and so Breda said nothing, waiting to hear what the woman would say next, and meanwhile wondering what such a modern design was doing inside an old building like that. Her romantic ideas of the search of knowledge had once again been shaken. He found me, Vika said, and Breda understood that she was referring to the bookseller. I came in search of a teacher. I want to follow the road of magic. Vika looked at Breda. She clearly possessed a gift, but she needed to know why the Magus of Folk had been so interested in her. The gift on its own was not enough. If the Magus had been new to magic, he might have been impressed by the clarity with which the gift manifested itself in the young man, but he had lived long enough to know that everyone possessed this gift. He was wise to such traps. She got up, went over to one of the bookshelves and picked up her favorite deck of cards. Do you know how to lay the cards? She asked. Breda nodded. She had done a few courses and knew that the deck in the woman's hand was a tarot deck with 78 cards. She had learned various ways of laying out the tarot and was glad to have a chance to show off her knowledge. However, the woman kept hold of the deck. She shuffled the cards, then placed them face down in no particular order in the glass table. This was a method quite unlike any Breda had learned in her courses. The woman sat looking at them for a moment, said a few words in a strange language, then turned over just one of the cards. It was card number 23, a king of clubs. Good protection, she said, from a strong, powerful man with dark hair. Her boyfriend was neither strong nor powerful, and the Max's hair was grey. Don't think about his physical appearance, said Vika, as if she had read her thoughts. Think of your soulmate. What do you mean, soulmate? Breda was surprised. The woman inspired a strange respect, different from the respect she had felt for the Magus or for the bookseller. Vika did not answer the question. She again shuffled the cards and again spread them in the same very disorderly manner on the table. Except this time, the cards were face up. The cards in the middle of that apparent confusion was card number 2, a woman forcing open the mouth of a lion.